afternoon, and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today's topic is a current exhibition at the Anchorage Museum called Extra Tough, Women of the North. The exhibit highlights contributions Indigenous women have made in Alaska and the North through creativity, vision, hard work, and love. It argues that colonialism and opportunistic elements of Western cultures changed this story, instead suggesting a narrative that the North was only, quote, a masculine testing ground to be discovered, exploited, and developed. Extra Tough confronts and dismantles this myth with evidence of key roles and pivotal work that women, both Indigenous and eventually newcomers, have contributed and continue to offer. Some names and work you will recognize, others will be a surprise. Here to serve as our audio guide to Extra Tough at the museum is the museum's chief curator, Francesca DeBrock, and at intervals throughout the show, we'll hear from several of the exhibition's featured contributors to speak on their own work. So, Francesca, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Very happy to have you. I want to just say to folks who are listening, we welcome your questions or comments. If you've seen the show and something really struck you about it, we'd love to hear from you. So the Anchorage number is 550-8433. Statewide, the number is 1-888-353-5752. And I will check our email at hometown@alaskapublic.org if questions or comments come in that way. I do want to let our listeners know that December marks a change for Hometown Alaska. This is a bit of business keeping for our listeners. We typically air live 2 o'clock on Mondays, but we are shifting to 10 a.m. on Monday mornings, beginning with our first show in December. So just a heads up, I'm sure there'll be notices on the website. And we'll continue to air in the evening at 8, and we will continue to podcast the program for access for our listeners at any time. So that's just the change. We'll be live at 10 a.m. Starting next week. Let's see. I also always alert people that some of the things we're going to talk about during the show today, certainly we'll be referring to Extra Tough, and we've got links to the museum's website and links to some of its online events that you can access. And also, some of our guests today represent community groups that have websites and Facebook pages, such as the Alaska Native Birthworks Community. And also the Forica Group. We have a contributor from the Forica Group. So we have those links on alaskapublic.org/hometown. And of course, you can still go to the museum and just search for Extra Tough, and it comes right up as one of their current exhibits. So I'm going to start with you, Francesca. I got to see the exhibit last Wednesday and in the afternoon, and circumstances have changed. We should get this out of the way as well. Just due to pandemic numbers, the exhibit will be, and the museum will be shuttered at least for a couple of weeks, beginning December 1, right, Francesca?
Yes. So in order to help support keeping our community safe, we're closing in accordance with the municipal lockdown for the month of December. But we still have lots of events happening online, so folks can still engage virtually.
Right. And we have links to a couple of those. You have several artists who were contributors who are going to this exhibit who are going to be on some live panels and talking discussions, and we have links to those. Certainly, you have them on your website. We've got a few of them on ours. I guess I should just, I have a little bio on you, Francesca. I know you've been, you know, working at the museum for a while, but still, some people might not know. So you are the chief curator, which sounds really weighty and scary to me, at the Anchorage Museum. Francesca is passionate about creative practice as a method of understanding and questioning the world, often collaborating with artists and community members to develop projects highlighting cultural diversity in the North. Before returning home to Alaska, Francesca worked as an artist, educator, archivist, translator, server, and briefly in wood conservation in Maine, California, and Mexico. So you were born here.
Yes.
And went out there into the big wide world and came back.
Yes, as many tend to do, I couldn't get Alaska out of my system, so
yeah.
I came back.
Yeah. And I said that the job of chief curator sounds really weighty. Is it? I mean, what's it like? If you put together exhibits like Extra Tough?
Well, it is a lot of work, but it's also a lot of fun. It usually involves a kind of a combination of stuff ranging from more kind of logistics and project management to really more kind of creative and community-based work. So for an exhibition like Extra Tough, you know, it's both finding artists and artworks and sort of coordinating loans from other places around the country and the world, but then also connecting locally with different groups and culture bearers and doing research and, you know, meeting people for coffee. So it's a lot of different things.
Every day is different, right? Let's talk a little bit about Extra Tough. Where did the germ of this idea come from?
So, you know, one of the things that we try and do at the Anchorage Museum, I think, with frequency is to tell stories about our place that helps people see sort of depth or nuance in our place and sort of see it with fresh eyes. And the goal of this exhibition was really to kind of take these male-dominated narratives that I think in the broader culture have really come to define the North. If you think of things like, you know, paintings by Sidney Lawrence and writers like Jack London or John Muir, you usually think or hear about the North as a place that men are exploring and sort of, in quotes, discovering. And so we really wanted this exhibition to put forth the stories of women and also to put forth stories from folks that don't identify as women or men, and to really think about their experiences of this place, how they've contributed to this place, and how representations of this place through their eyes may be different than representations we're accustomed to seeing.
Yeah. You know, one of the, well, a couple things I want to say. One is, I when I saw the exhibit, the first part I discovered was a section on gender. And this notion that in traditional cultures, there have been people who are, I think they're called of two spirits, which means, I guess, you know, gender neutral or on a spectrum of gender or not identifying in the binary way. And, you know, I thought that was really interesting. I've lived in Alaska about 30 years and have come upon this idea before. But, you know, what I hadn't thought of was that that went away with colonialism, that like sort of that sort of a binary view of the world, men and women and their specific roles kind of wiped that out. Can you talk just a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think that it is more palpable, actually, currently, that ideas around gender are socially constructed and they're always changing. And I think that we're seeing kind of more rapid change in acceptance for identities along a spectrum currently, which is really exciting. But it's important to also think back into history and also realize that, that this has always been changing and in flux and informed by the different cultures of a place. So we wanted to, you know, sort of start out acknowledging that and also acknowledging that even by talking about an exhibition like this one, Women of the North, that you're sort of falling back into the same trap of thinking along a binary.
Yes, that's true.
Which we were trying to just kind of acknowledge the trickiness of that and open the door to kind of say that there are so many more conversations that need to be had and so many more exhibitions that need to be had that explore the depths of this topic.
Mm-hmm. Right. One of the things that you did tell me when we talked beforehand was, you know, source material. Many of these stories, of course, we talked a little bit about there are some sort of community institutions that recognize the work of women. And last week we talked about the YWCA, Women of Achievement. We've in the past talked about the Women's Hall of Fame. And those do highlight much of the work of women. But there's something else you were going for in addition to that. Could you talk about the search for something that was more less an individual achiever, but more a grassroots or community approach. I don't know how to ask that any better, but go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, kind of tied a little bit to your previous question as well. You know, along with colonization, you get things like patriarchy and capitalism as a dominant sort of economic system. So these are all things that impact so much of how we think about and perceive the world. And I think that's important to recognize. So what we wanted to do was to try and tell a little bit more of a kind of collective story. I think in our culture, we have a tendency to highlight the sort of remarkable few, you know, and really focus on these individual identities, which is very, you know, important to up women and kind of add them into the canon where they've been left out. But I also think we need to think about these things in a kind of more collective way. And so we had set out to try and do some more research in that vein. And it's interesting, there have been efforts through kind of Alaska's history that are more collective. There was a women's commission in the legislature, and, you know, there was a women's resource center, and there was a publication called Alaska Woman Magazine. And all of these things sort of yielded insights, but all of those kind of initiatives actually sort of ended in the 80s and 90s. So it's interesting to see the way these things kind of go in waves, and there'll be sort of a flowering of thought and work around these ideas, and then it will kind of dissipate. So we were really kind of seeking to latch on to those kind of more collective histories or comprehensive stories of women in place. And they're pretty hard to find, actually. They're not really written about in books or in academic publications. So our research really involved talking to a lot of people, going back to individuals, going back to coffee and Zoom, and just kind of talking to people about their own experiences in this place.
Mm-hmm.
And also talking to the artists. I think we let the art drive a lot of what we talk about in the exhibition, and the artists are just so thoughtful. We'll hear from Amber Webb later in the program, and really thinking through their work and their ideas is a great way to kind of start to crack some of these ideas and get into the meat of these more kind of collective experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we will have opportunities throughout the hour, Francesca, you and I, to go back and forth on different elements of the exhibit, because I have a lot of things that I think we would want to bring out. But at this time, I want to remind our listeners the topic today is Extra Tough, which is an exhibit at the Anchorage Museum on women of the North, and kind of debunks the myth that the last frontier was the place for a male dominance, right? And then trying to tell different stories of how women have shaped the past, shape the present, and are thinking about the future, things like, you know, climate change and the health of the planet and things like that. So we'll have opportunities to talk about that. But and also, you know, if folks have questions to ask Francesca or any of our guests, the number here in Anchorage is 550-8433, and I'll check our email. But what I want to get to is one of the groups represented in the show was Alaska Native Birth Workers Community. And we invited several people from that group to join us on the show and to talk a little bit about it, because it was new for me. And I thought that would be new for other listeners, and it would be great to give some space in the program to that. So I think I can welcome Stacey Lucasen on. Are you there, Stacey?
Hi, Kathleen and Fran. Yeah, I'm here.
Great to have you. Thank you for taking the time. And I think we're going to find a way to include Margaret David with us at the same time, because you're both speaking about... Are you there, Margaret?
Hi, this is Margaret. I'm here.
Thank you. So you're on with Stacey, and of course, Francesca's here. And what I wanted to do was talk a little bit about the mission and service that comes forward with the Alaska Native birth workers community. First of all, can you tell me a little bit about how it was formed? And I guess I will say, I'll start with Stacy and then go to Margaret. Do you have some details on the origins, Stacy?
Oh, no. I was going to say go to Margaret.
Okay, no problem. Margaret, hello. I saw on the Facebook page and on your website, and we've linked to your website on Hometown Alaska, some reference to a group. I saw a photo of a group of women that looked like founders. But tell me how it got started.
Sure. There are a group of six of us now. So my perspective of the way we came together kind of goes back a few years. I don't know if we have time for all of that, but I'll just say that I'm currently a midwife, an Alaska Native midwife, and became a midwife with the intention of serving rural Alaska Native birthing people. And I work in Anchorage at the Alaska Native Medical Center, where about half of the births are with families not from the Anchorage area. And before I became a midwife, I was working in tribal health with really wanting to support those people that are here in Anchorage birthing alone, away from their support systems, with, you know, wanting to create some kind of labor support program or a doula program. So that was a while ago. I since became a midwife and in 2015 started connecting with other Indigenous midwives throughout the states and Canada. We had an initial gathering of this, you know, current group working together in 2015, and since then started organizing, you know, a handful of us came together and continued organizing to host more gatherings and different communities step forward to host in their communities. And in 2017, we were able to host an Indigenous Midwifery Ancestral Knowledge Keepers gathering in Anchorage, actually in Eagle River. And local people and, you know, from around the state and locally were able to, that were interested in birth work, met there. And then from that gathering, a handful of us continued meeting and grassroots organizing to figure out, you know, how to work towards that goal of supporting birthing people that are away from their support systems. And we just started, you know, by volunteering as labor support people or doulas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of how the group came together. And over the last year, you know, we've been able to become more formalized, got a website up, have been working on fundraising, and had planned, you know, a few trainings this last year before COVID hit. So now they're on hold until 2021. But with the goal of growing our network and helping create pathways for more Alaska Native birth workers.
Mm-hmm. I've included your Facebook page and your website, and I just thought I would share the vision that's on the website. Our vision is that every Alaska Native birthing person feels supported, well cared for, and full of the information they need to make confident choices around reproductive health, birthing, and parenthood. In doing this, we seek to reclaim as well as create new ceremony and heal our ancestors and future generations who may have been harmed through the colonization of our bodies, healthcare, and birthing practices. I read a contribution on your Facebook page from a person who, Sage Thomas, who was saying, making the point that these traditional birth ways is a way of to step into sovereignty, I think, as she put it. Indigenous midwifery and birth work is my act of resistance, is my fight of decolonizing, is my hope in reclamation. So it sounds like almost a solidarity and a reclamation, I think she used the term. And I guess I was curious, are there older traditions that you're returning to, you know, people didn't always fly to Anchorage to have their babies, right? There must have been people in smaller communities who... So I'm just wondering, is that part of this, a kind of a return to ritual and past practice? And I guess I'll ask Mo if you're there.
Sure, absolutely. Yes, that's definitely one of the goals, is to remember and help piece together some of our original ceremonies and traditional knowledge around the childbearing year. As many of you are aware of, you know, through decolonization, some of those practices were, or the transmission of that knowledge was disrupted. And so we're building our base, you know, to find each other, to connect, build our network, and help each other, you know, remember and piece together that traditional knowledge again, as well as, you know, like it said, create new ceremonies around the childbearing year.
Mm-hmm. And Stacey, what I'm going to have to stop and take a break and say goodbye to both of you, but I'm so glad we got to introduce the community and talk a little bit about your mission and your growth. But Stacey, let me touch base with you a little bit. What's your experience been with the birth workers community?
So I found Mo and the other Indigenous midwives at that 2017 gathering, and have been working with them, helping with some of the program running and the virtual talking circles. That's one of the ways that we've been able to stay connected, even while the pandemic has made us not be physically together. I think that it's one of the communities that, or ways that we can build community, that we all share around, you know, having families. And even if it's not us individually birthing, like, we all know people that are having children and are looking for the sort of support that our communities used to provide, that a lot of colonization and industrialization just walked away from. And I think it's, you know, a healthier and stronger way to approach, like, starting a family.
Well, I have to say, I have to let you go. I'm sorry. 10 minutes goes by so fast, but I do have a link to Alaska Native Birthworkers Community website and to your Facebook page, because I see that you have speakers and, you know, just a lot, as you said, grassroots organizing that's going on. So I just wanted to share that with our listeners. And thank you both for taking the time on probably a busy Monday to share a little bit about this organization. So I say thank you to you both. And to our listeners, I'm going to say we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Our topic today is an exhibit at the Anchorage Museum called Extra Tough, Women of the North. And the good news about that exhibit is, even though our city of Anchorage is going into a kind of hunker down mode again and the museum will be closed in December, this exhibit will be around through September of 2021. And there's a lot of online activity around the exhibit, and we have links to that. And, of course, the museum has links to that on their website. So there are ways to engage with this exhibit while you wait for the opportunity to walk through the exhibit. So we just want you to know about that. We do have callers on holding here, and I'm going to get to some of them quickly. Just to let you know, our guest today is Francesca Dubrock, who's the chief curator at the Anchorage Museum. We just heard from the Alaska Native Birthworkers community. Margaret David and Stacey Lucasen were on and just telling us a little bit about that. We're going to take a question from Heather at the moment, and then we're going to welcome Lori Wolf on from the Forica Group, who did work with partnerships with academics to talk about the wage gap that women experience in Alaska. So first, let me go to Heather. Hello, Heather. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. Thanks for holding. And tell me what your question is.
Thanks, Kathleen. I'm almost moaning over the new time. This old dog has to adjust to some new times. Francesca, welcome back home. And she really is a local. I remember when she was born.
Ah.
I remember her in elementary school. And yes, we go back a long ways. Francesca, I have a specific question for you. I actually did see the exhibit, and yes, I contributed to it because I think it's a great, great idea. But one of the things I couldn't do was stand in front of the screen that says, this is in remembrance of, or this is because of, or this is the all of that sort of stuff. And I tried to send you a message. Could I get a written copy of all of those? I think that was one of the neatest things in there, that you could say, this is in memory of my mother or somebody who did something great. And I just would like to see that list. Could you either post it on it or send me an email, one or the other?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're actually working on getting the slightly more in-depth web page up for the exhibition. And we could perhaps explore getting it up there. But while we're getting that worked out, I'd be happy to send you an email with all of that.
Okay.
Thank you. I enjoyed the panels as well. I listened to part of them, but I had a problem because it was kind of Facebook, and I'm not very Facebooky. So, Kathleen, I hope you're reposting those two foursomes that we had. They were really great.
Oh, the experience of women of color and then women leadership, right?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Yes. Well, thanks for calling, Heather. And I think you did tell me, Francesca, that those are still available through the museum's website, right?
Yeah.
So we'll talk a little bit more about that. Yeah. What I need to do is welcome on Lori Wolf, who's been holding here. And I know she ducked out of a meeting to join us to talk a little bit about gender gap payment information. There's a part of the exhibit that deals with this, sort of women making their way in the labor, the world of labor. Welcome, Lori. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm well, thank you.
So thank you for squeezing us in. I really appreciate it. I have been to the exhibit, and I saw that large display of, sort of details like how much a woman's salary drops every time she, based on each child that she has, she loses income, or that it will be not until the year 2277 when, at the rate we're going, women will receive pay parity with men. So tell me a little bit about the
too
work. Yes. Well, we won't be here, right? Maybe our daughters will be here. But tell me a little bit. I know that you did not do all the data gathering, but tell me a little bit about who you partnered with for this.
Yeah, thanks so much. Well, it's just a couple of things. So the Forica Group has a long commitment to raising awareness and helping to end the gender pay gap here in Alaska and hopefully across the country. And because of our deep commitment to this for over many years, we have been able to partner with some remarkable people. And so the first person I just want to do a shout out for is Corrine Weibold at the Department of Labor. So Corrine has done some just remarkable work about the pay gap across all industries in up the whole Alaska workforce. And she has a great report that she put out in the Department of Labor, publishes a trends report every quarter. And there is I commend to all of your listeners that trends report. We have a link to that on our website. I'm sure we'll give that to you so you can give that out to your listeners as well.
Mm-hmm.
But so she identified the pay gap for all industries, and Alaska has a bit of a gem here in the ability to that Corrine had been able to identify, which is that all Alaska workers who also file for their permanent fund dividend have to check a gender identification box when they file. And although that is binary choice at the moment, it does give us the ability to know about the gender pay gap in a way that many other states and many other industries just don't know. So she tapped into that gem, and with a lot of wonderful statistical analysis on her part, and then our other partner, the Center for Economic Development at UAA, they were able to take Corrine's data, and then we had them cross-tab it with all of the nonprofit employment in the state, and voila, we have our numbers for Alaska and the nonprofit sector in particular. And that is, so what's highlighted in the exhibit is a combination of our report about the nonprofit sector in general, and then a few additional nuggets that the Center for Economic Development were able to pull for Alaska's workforce overall. And so this partnership is just, it's remarkable. And the use of that PFD data has also just been such a gift. Before that, we were having to use salary survey data in order to assess the situation. And that just did not give us the kind of data that we needed to be able to really say where we stand right now.
Very interesting. A luck of data collection that made a window into something that maybe people weren't even thinking about when they added that to the to the form. But anyway, I want to draw you in, Francesca. That what I saw when I went to the museum was images of women who were working. There were women working on the pipeline in the 70s. There's a discussion of labor being really a gendered commodity, I guess. People think of certain work is women's work and certain work is men's work, but here the pipeline created an opportunity because they needed so many workers that women were able to join in. Another interesting example is teachers. Just a little bit of information. This comes from Ward Wells' collection. There's an image of a teacher in Anaktuvuk Pass in 1962. And it's a woman. And it says, during the 1800s, male teachers in the U.S. began moving out of the profession and into higher-paying occupations. Female teachers, meanwhile, were perceived to possess gentle and caring dispositions suited to working with children. Some of these biases persist today, and women continue to dominate the teaching workforce in Alaska. In 2017, 71% of teachers and instructors were women. Men in the profession, however, earned 19% more on average in salary. That's details coming out of the data then, right, Lori?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Sort of that idea that the amount of that men in that profession earn 19% more. Another example is caretakers and healers in the homes and communities. Again, drawing from the exhibit, with the rise of hospitals in the 19th and 20th century, nursing became one of the few professions that welcomed women. Nursing remains a gender-segregated profession, with women making up 91% of the workforce, according to the 2010 census. Anyway, let me just draw you both in a little bit. Tell me, Francesca, why it was important to you to have this be part of the exhibit.
Yeah, well, that room, that gallery is really all about, the exhibition is organized into women and society, women and place, and then women and work. And that, the idea behind that was to really highlight the labor that women do and have done here for centuries, that shapes this place and shapes generations of people and shapes our society, and often is overlooked and undercompensated. And so we wanted to examine that from a number of different angles, and we were so delighted to find the 4-acre report as we were sort of trying to wrap up all the details of the exhibition, which prompted us to create this kind of really visual display to highlight the gender wage gap that is persistent and I think important to note, because I think we tend to feel that our society is a more equitable place than it really is. I think there's starting to be broader awareness about that regarding race and racism, especially after this summer, but but I think we still are living a little bit in the dark when it comes to sexism and gender discrimination.
Yeah. One other side note, I know that you focused on entrepreneurs, women entrepreneurs, which is sort of the other side of this coin, which is maybe women who start their own businesses, you know, maybe they're going to run their own show, basically. And there was a reference to a study done by the it's a CED, so I think it's the UAA, Center for Economic Development, from 2018, I think this is. But anyway, it makes the point that in Alaska, 26% of all employer firms are women-owned, which is the highest in the United States. The majority of those businesses are less than 5 years old. This is dating to 2018, so they're older now, with 71% having fewer than five employees and 15% earning more than $1 million in annual revenue. And they spoke with one of the analysts, and they were asking her, well, why is it that Alaska has the highest number of women entrepreneurs? And she, her quote is interesting. She says, there's no specific data to support this. It's kind of observational, but I feel like it's the Alaska spirit. If there's a problem, you just fix it, you do it, you find a way around it, she says. Because our state is so young, we don't have a lot of embedded gender dynamics, but also the women here are really strong and tough. So it almost sounds like women are taking on the male persona of having to be tough. But I also think there's this, you know, there is some truth to that idea that when there's not a lot of resources, you figure out how to fix something. If you can't take it to the repair shop, you get out your duct tape and you figure out how to make it, hold it together. Or if you need something, you know, Alaska hasn't always had all the resources that it has today. So I don't know. I just wanted to reflect a little bit on that. It's really a frustration to see the wage gap persist here. It's also interesting to notice, you know, saying women are tough. It's almost like echoing a, sort of a male persona. But then this idea that if you need something done, you get it done. And that's kind of an Alaskan spirit. So let me go to you, Francesca. Just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, this idea of tough, we called the exhibition Extra Tough, which is obviously a little riff on The Boot,
yes.
Which is, you know,
pretty fun
pop culture identity in Alaska, but also kind of thinking about this idea of toughness and trying to reframe it in a way where we kind of expand what we think of as tough. So I think if anything comes through loud and clear in this exhibition, it's that, you know, women are the women in the exhibition and women in our communities are doers and they're dreamers and they're compassionate and they're interested in sustainability and care. And, you know, that manifests as people kind of rolling up their sleeves and starting their own business, and but also in lots of other ways. And I think, you know, tough in that way can be seen, you know, in the traditional kind of like masculine definition of it, but it could also be more expansive in terms of how we think about toughness as care, you know, as sustainability, as creating things for mutual benefit. I mean, a lot of the entrepreneurs we highlight in the exhibition, you'll notice actually have a pretty socially oriented sort of framework for their business. Things marketed towards families, towards women, towards children, towards rural communities. So, not things that are looking to benefit the broader whole rather than just, you know, enrich themselves.
Right. And, you know, a story came up in a previous show about the pandemic of 1918, and it was a story about someone's grandmother who saw what was happening in her rural community, that people were dying. She took her family into the woods for a year. This is the story told by her grandson. And when they came back to the village a year later, you know, the story went that there were only small children and you know, dogs and pets and animals that were still somehow struggling and still alive. And so, you know, she had the foresight and the leadership to take her family away and provide for them. And her son today is the chief of that village as it's rebounded. I mean, the need to shoulder the burden, whether it's labor or, you know, helping your family survive. That was, to me, a strong story that shows women really shouldering the burden. So, Lori, we're gonna have to take a break. But is there anything you want to leave us with? And we'll let you jump back into your meeting. But thank you so much for joining us at least for a little bit. Yeah. Anything you want to leave us with?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say I do think we all have to, know the data, know the facts, and watch our excuses for why these really tough women are still making less money in the workforce.
Yeah.
And because they are. And COVID is taking a very hard turn, especially on our moms. And all the data is there to tell us that we are bearing the brunt of this pandemic as women in the workforce. So mm-hmm. I just invite everyone to really, dive into the data and then take action. We have 8 action steps everyone can take, no matter where you are in the workforce, to begin to end the gender pay gap. And it will take us all. What I notice is that when we have these conversations, it's women who's talking about it, but we need the men to have the conversations with us mm-hmm. because that's how the change is going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I invite everyone who's listening to look at those action steps that we offer on our website and that have been proven to help end this pay gap, and all of us work together to see our children be extra tough and get paid for it at the same time.
Right, right. That was really my question, because this is such an old story, and I was going to say, how can we fix it? And there you have the steps that an individual worker in the labor force can take. So I want to say thank you, Lori Wolf, for all your insight and contributions to our show. And we're going to take a tiny break. It's time for us to do that. So thank you, Lori, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and I'm here with Francesca Dubrac, who is the chief curator at the Anchorage Museum. And we're talking about Extra Tough Women of the North, a new exhibition that opened in November at the museum and will be at the museum through September of 2021. And, we'll talk a little bit more with Francesca about how people can engage now with what's on the website and panels and, presentations and discussions that are ongoing that are springing out of this exhibit. I do want to take one caller who's been holding patiently for quite a while. So let me just welcome Caroline on to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Caroline. Perhaps we have lost Caroline. Okay. All right. Well, I'm sorry, Caroline. If you call back, we will try to get you on. And we had several planned guests who were calling in. It took a while to get to you. So back to you, Francesca. We are hoping to hear from Amber Webb. We expect her to call in about 2:35. So we'll see if that works. But let's go back to just some of the things we wanted to talk about in the exhibit. I wanted to talk about the affirmation chairs. Could you talk a little bit about that? I sat in a chair and I heard women talking about where they get their strength or how they get up every morning or when times are tough, how they pull from within themselves the strength to do what they need to do. So talk a little bit about that and how it came about.
Yeah, so that is an installation in the exhibition called the Affirmation Chair. We wanted to make an interactive that would be safe during the pandemic, so it's really something you can just sit in. You don't really have to touch anything. And what we wanted to do with that was to, we spoke a little bit earlier about the challenge of finding printed resources in research. So that installation was really meant to highlight the power of these living stories that are held by people throughout the state about women and passed down through families and generations. And so we put out an ask to a lot of different people all across the state, asking for them to send, to self-record on their iPhones and Androids and send in, you know, guiding mantra, advice from an elder, just something that's sort of been a touchstone for them in their lives. And it was so humbling and beautiful to work on that project. Over the summer when, you know, numbers were going up and sort of the news all around was quite grim, and I'd have these emails coming to me from people that I'd met before, people who are perfect strangers, with these just really kind of radically generous offerings. Some, you know, very intimate, private. Some people recorded songs. Some people wrote poems. It's just a really broad range. They're in different languages. And so we compiled all of those and put them into this installation. So you just kind of sit there and let these sort of words and wisdoms wash over you. Mm-hmm. And I should note that we are also planning on creating a digital playlist of all of those affirmations and having it available on the website. So
how fun.
If you're having a dreary week,
just dial
really
in. And didn't you tell me that you're working with Arctic Entries to develop a few of those into a longer form story?
Yes. So some of our contributors to that installation were interested in developing a longer form story about their affirmation. So Arctic Entries was already wanting to develop a show focused on women. So we just decided to collaborate and to kind of expand the affirmation share project. And so the story coaches over at Arctic Entries have been working with, I think, about 14 people. So there'll be shows coming up in February and March through Arctic Entries that really focus on those stories. So I hope that listeners will tune in.
Oh, that's pretty fun. We did get Carolyn back. Let me bring her on. And then, Francesca, you and I may just have to talk about Amber's piece of work in the ourselves, because I just don't know. This is live radio and things happen in people's lives. She may not have been able to call in from Dillingham. So, but let's find out what Carolyn's question was. Hi, Caroline.
Yeah, well, this is Caroline, and I was hoping that this would fit into your conversation. I've been up here a total of 50 years, and one of the things which I have noted from the places I have lived, and that is the community is made up of everyone. And the community in Alaska got short-circuited when it came to a major part of why we even have an Alaska, and that's our indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that we need to look and see what we missed because it was not covered in the history.
Mm, as to Francesca's point, no source material for some of this, you know, contributions of women historically.
Just have an open mind,
mm-hmm.
and a recognition that that we didn't invent everything,
mm-hmm.
we being the dominant culture up here.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that it's super important for people to understand they're appreciated,
mm-hmm.
and to have more male teachers in the classroom. Men, boys learn how to behave as men from men, as the other does with girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that these are important aspects, and I'm so grateful to the museum, which I have supported for a number of years, and I urge everyone to, because this is the repository of our essence.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, the repository
I think,
of our essence.
Truly, that we are missing out on good grief. I mean, how did anyone in the circumpolar area survive?
Mm-hmm.
As I told a friend of mine one time, I said I could have been a Navajo. I'm part Cherokee. I said I could have been a Navajo. I could have never been an Eskimo. This is back in the day when that was the term. I could have never been an Eskimo because I'd have just kept walking south.
Looking for warmth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, just understand that, you know, if we need a hand, someone reaches down to help us. We don't care who it is.
Mm-hmm.
We're grateful, and we are a community, and we will be stronger as individuals if we make sure that we understand we're part of a community.
Well, thank you for that, Caroline. I really appreciate it. And have you been able to see the exhibit yet?
Not yet, but believe me, I will be. And unfortunately, I'm fussing at myself because I wanted to see it in the early time before all of those exhibits get talked about and everybody knows about them but me.
Yeah.
But I will definitely be there in January.
All right.
My birthday month, I will definitely be there.
Oh, well, that's a great way to spend your birthday. So thank you so much, Caroline. I really appreciate your calling in and sharing that with us. So, Francesca, let's see about how to talk about. We have about 10 minutes, and I just, you know, think Amber's piece of art, you know, that's on loan to you for this exhibit is remarkable. I have an image of it on our website at Hometown Alaska. I don't know whether the museum is working on an expanded website for the exhibit. I'm not sure if it's up there yet. But can we talk a little bit about it, what it's called? And we may still, I think we have Amber. So let's let her join us. But, you know, to your point, Francesca, that this is an art show primarily. You talked about women at work, women in the landscape, sort of various areas where women are featured. And I would like to welcome Amber.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking the time to join us. I appreciate it very much. We were just getting ready to talk about the piece of your work that is in the exhibit. And I guess we could jump right in. I was just going to ask Francesca to describe it, but perhaps you can. We do have an image of it on our website, and I know people can find it at the museum. But tell us a little bit about it, what the name means, and some of the craft on the body of the women and what it means. So I don't know. That's a just jump in. So what is it called?
Well, it's called Muk, which means water in Yupik and the Yuchtun language. I wrote that piece trying to draw a connection between the life that women create and life that's in water, and also I was kind of exploring the ideas of how, you know, women are treated traditionally with esteem and respect because of their connection to giving life and all the things that they do in their communities, and then often in Western society, women have been exploited. And it's kind of like drawing that connection, but also looking at how we're now in a time in history where water isn't always respected, but we're like kind of emerging from that and bringing back a lot of those indigenous ways of thinking. And so I was kind of exploring what that connection is. And so the piece is basically a picture of a woman's body, almost like a landmass.
Ah, yes.
Water, mm-hmm. With like kind of like mimicking the way that maps look.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put a lot of different traditional pieces in there, like animals and how, like, kind of rivers coming up as offshoots and things like that.
Mm-hmm. How did this come to you? Did the image come first and then you just explored the idea fully? Or, you know, the image of the there's two women represented in it.
Actually, Kathleen, it's one woman.
Oh.
That's a bad image I gave you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. And I even saw it, and I realize it's one. So I apologize. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what did you see first, Amber? Did you see the woman's body and then add the elements? How did it emerge?
That's kind of an interesting question. It just kind of came out the way it came out. I started drawing the face. And the face just kind of came to me, I guess. And it was one of those pieces where I didn't really think about it. I just made it. And I was thinking, I was actually thinking about Native Peoples Action and a lot of the work that they've been doing around like water sovereignty and tribal sovereignty, and that kind of just, that was just what came out.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really plan it, so.
Yeah, it's like something else takes over, deeper understanding. It's really attractive, compelling, and it's in the exhibit, and I know people will be able to go and see it when the museum is open. I also listened, actually, Amber, to you speaking with the Bunnell Gallery, and I put a link to that on our website because it was so interesting to hear you reflect on isolation and inspiration. That was the gist of the conversation, and you were there on a panel with several artists. But I added that just because it stuck with me so much, your discussion of, rivers, salmon returning, how people return to their families, how families share the name, and so we're always going back, and it's like a cyclical and circular kind of thing. And it was just, not necessarily related to your piece of artwork here in Extra Tough, but you're articulate and thoughtful about, our place, the place of women, the place of humans in this bigger landscape. And I just really appreciated that. And I just thought other people might really enjoy hearing you think out loud about that. So I did include that link. Anyway, anything you want to leave us with, Amber? We're going to run out of time here pretty quickly. But I'm so pleased that you were able to call in from Dillingham and take the time. And, what would you like people to walk away from your piece of artwork thinking about?
Well, one of the things I would probably add is just that, you pick ways of thinking about the world, we're all about balance. Everything is balanced. And, when you're talking about those cyclical ways of existing, Yupik names don't have gender implied because those names are transcend gender. So
transcend gender, yes.
So I think that, when we're talking about Extra Tough Women and thinking about that, what that really is balance, I think.
All right. I could talk to you for hours. Maybe we'll find another way to have you join us and share some of your thoughts, but we are actually deeply out of time. I want to say thank you so much, Amber, for calling us. Amber Webb, an artist from Dillingham. And also I'd like to thank Francesca DeBrock, Chief Curator of the Anchorage Museum, Lori Wolf with the Foraker Group, and Margaret David and Stacy Lucasen with the Alaska Native Birthworkers Community. Next week, we take a look at UAA NC2A skiing as it works to stay alive by raising its own funding and budget once the university eliminated its support due to funding cutbacks. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Eric Bork was our audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.